This B Podcast Network show is presented by IXL. Loved and trusted by more than 1 million teachers, IXL enhances your teaching and takes work off your plate so you can make an even bigger impact on your students. IXL delivers personalized learning across a comprehensive pre-K-12 curriculum, including math, language arts, science, and social studies, and helps you assess student performance through actionable, real-time insights. Strengthen daily instruction, close knowledge gaps quickly, and set every student up for success. Want to bring IXL to your school? Learn more at IXL.com/BE. That's IXL.com/BE. Welcome to the Cybertraps Podcast. I'm Jethro Jones, coming to you from Spokane, Washington, host of the podcast Transformative Principal and author of the book School X, How to Redesign Your School for the People Right in Front of You.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Frederick Lane, an author, attorney, and educational consultant based in Brooklyn, New York, which you may hear out the window during the course of this broadcast. I'm the author of 10 books, including most recently Cybertraps for Educators 2.0, Raising Cyber Ethical Kids, and Cybertraps for Expecting Moms and Dads. Jethro and I have teamed up to bring timely, entertaining, and useful information to teachers, parents, and others about the risks arising from the use and the misuse of digital devices.
The Cybertraps Podcast is a production of the Center for Cyber Ethics, an independent, nonpartisan educational institute dedicated to the study and promotion of cyber ethics as a positive social force through research, curricular development, publishing and media, professional training, and public advocacy.
We are pleased to report that Buoyancy Digital is the inaugural mission partner for the Cybertraps podcast series, a digital advertising consultancy with an ethos. Buoyancy was founded by Scott Rabinowitz, who's been in digital media since 1997 and who has overseen $300 million in youth safety compliant ad buys across all digital platforms for IAB, Google, and Bing accredited brand and audience safe advertising, sales solutions, media buying, and organizational training for media publishers. Reach out to Scott at buoyancydigital.com or on LinkedIn at Scott R Media. Hey there, Jethro.
Hey, Fred. Happy Monday to you.
It is a happy Monday. Any day we're up and taking nourishment is a happy day.
That's right. Oh, good times. Well,
indeed. So how's your summer going?
Summer has been great. It's been beautiful here in Eastern Washington. Of course, we've had the fire smoke like a lot of people here in the Western United States have. But other than that, it's been a very, very nice summer. How about for you?
Well, of course, except for the fact that you've been sending some of that smoke eastward to New York. No, it's been fine. As you know, as our devoted listeners know, I had a little bit of a break last month, but it's good to be back up and running. And we're accelerating our work on the Center for Cyber Ethics, just to let people know that that project is underway. So we're getting ourselves organized, waiting for the IRS to give us the official stamp of approval and go from there.
From what I understand, we'll be waiting a while still. So
I suspect our first anniversary will pass by the time we get that.
Yes, that is probably true.
That is all fine. So today, the topic, I think, arose out of our conversations about how some social media apps are evolving and changing. And I was inspired by a great New York Times article that we'll have in the show notes about how TikTok is becoming the new Facebook. And, you know, I think you know enough about this stuff, having watched the news and so forth, that, you know, there's always someone being denominated the next Facebook.
Right.
But this might actually be the one, and it's going to be really interesting.
This could really happen this time.
That's right. So let's talk a little bit about what that might mean. And I think, you know, what our goal here is that, you know, as we've discussed, we're trying to really help parents understand this stuff. So every so often, we're going to do a deep dive or deepish dive into a specific social media platform. And today in the crosshairs is TikTok, and hopefully people will come away a little bit better informed about what some of the issues are. And I think a couple of weeks from now, when we go live again, we'll line up WhatsApp and go through that, because there really are some fascinating things happening with social media platforms.
Yeah, for sure. And one thing that we have to recognize is that they are communicating what is the zeitgeist of what's going on in the world in a much more efficient and effective way than the news media. I mean, TikTok has like 49 million active daily users, and there is no TV show or podcast or radio show that is approaching those kinds of worldwide numbers that I'm aware of.
Well, no, actually, that's just in the United States, worldwide.
Just in the United States? I misread that. That's crazy.
49 million active daily users just in this country. Now, to be fair, when we talk about all of these social media apps, and we're trying to make that comparison, right, between television shows or radio shows or, you know, your favorite podcast, the question is how many people are tuning in to a specific content provider or video? Now, that being said, your point is still accurate. There are numerous videos on TikTok that have millions of viewers, which vastly exceeds most television programs, mm-hmm. you know, particularly with the splintering of television as we know it. I mean, me especially, but you and I both, to one degree or another, grew up in an era where television programs were events, right? Each week you tuned into a show. That, of course, has vanished.
Yeah. Well, and with the Olympics that just happened, they had some of the lowest ratings for the Olympics that they've ever had, and we're not anywhere close to what TikTok is doing. And a lot of people were going straight to the athletes they cared about and following their social media and seeing what was going on with each of them. So that's totally fascinating. But we should probably back up just a minute and say, what exactly is TikTok? Let's talk about that first and who created it. So let's start with, what is TikTok?
That sounds great. So this in general terms is probably familiar to most people, right? But TikTok is a free social media service that focuses on the sharing of brief videos, typically with musical background of one kind or another, you know, which is provided within the app. And those videos run from 15 seconds to 3 minutes. Actually, TikTok made a bit of a splash earlier this year when it expanded the potential length of the videos. So that's opening up a whole new range of storytelling, monetization, promotion, all the rest of that.
And what is so fascinating to me is how it used to be that in these really short clips, the challenge was, how do you get as much content and information in there as possible? And now that we're expanding it to, that they're expanding it to 3 minutes, then it's giving people more time to get things said, but they've been practicing getting information out in a short amount of time. And my favorite TikTok video of all time that I should share is the one where there's a girl who is playing God and an angel, and she came back and reported that the dinosaurs had all become extinct. And the as she's playing God, she says, "What do you mean extinct?" And then the angel replies, "Well, you told me to send a meteor to the dinosaurs." And God says, "I said meteor. Make the dinosaurs meteor." She said, "Meteor? No, meteor. Meteor?" And anyway, it is so well done and so wonderful. That girl she did an amazing job. I have no idea who she is. I'd love to credit it. I'll try to find the video and put it in the show notes. But I mean, thing is I think a perfect encapsulation of what is TikTok. It is short, quippy, interesting things, lots of lip syncing and things like that. Dances are popular on there also. But it's little things that you can enjoy, definitely entertainment driven, though there are a lot of people who are doing information on there as well, news reports, things like that, that just in a much different way. And I think a much more engaging way, to be honest.
Well, and it's obviously incredibly engaging, right? Because this thing was launched in 2017 to a global audience, and we'll get into that in a sec. But in 4 years, it's racked up, I think, over 2 billion mobile downloads worldwide. Wow. It's a staggeringly huge number of people. I mean, what's that? A quarter of the world's population has downloaded TikTok. So that's where the origin story of this obviously becomes relevant. Yeah, right? Because this is not a bunch of guys in Silicon Valley who put this together.
and this is where I think, going back to what you said, that this could be the next Facebook, is that this is much different because it was created by the Chinese, and the Chinese app was called Douyin. Did I say that right? I'm not sure.
You did. Yeah.
So Douyin, and the Chinese company is called ByteDance. And so can you help me understand, last year there was an issue where Trump said ByteDance, the creator of it, need to sell parts of it to an American company. And part of that is because of us having all of our information stored on Chinese servers and being concerned about that. But what else is going on there? And how do we understand that? Because Biden reversed that too, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's not much more to put on top of what you just said in broad strokes. All right, we're not going to delve too deeply into the minutia of it. But the basic idea was that, honestly, Trump was looking to put pressure on the Chinese government and Chinese companies as part of this ongoing trade war that was being waged. And one of the ways that he thought would be good to do that was to limit the ability of ByteDance, i.e. TikTok, to function in the United States. And so what he wanted to do by executive order was to shut down the ability of anyone in the United States to download that app. Now, that actually raises interesting First Amendment issues, which never really got confronted, but there probably would have been a legal challenge if that had stayed in effect. But this was done very late in the Trump administration. And as you correctly point out, not long after he took office, Biden simply reversed that. And so it reverted back to the status quo. So I think the primary motivation was to irritate the Chinese government and make life a little bit harder for ByteDance. But as we'll be discussing going into this, there are legitimate privacy issues, given the fact that it is being run by a Chinese corporation. And there's always a question, right, between how much share or about how much sharing occurs between any given Chinese corporation and the Chinese government. And actually, I think one of the things that's important for people to understand, it's not really an issue for TikTok yet, although in one area which we'll get into, but the Douyin app, which is the original app that ByteDance created, has an entire feed that is on every user's app, which promotes the Chinese government. So, all you have to do is slide right and you get the Chinese government propaganda feed. So one of the concerns legitimately is that not only could the information that TikTok collects be misused, but at some point would TikTok be pressured outside of China to provide that kind of propaganda? And one thing that has specifically arisen is that TikTok is used within China, but any videos referencing or discussing the Uyghur situation in Northwest China instantly get suppressed.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that brings up the idea of the algorithm, that is another very unique aspect of TikTok, is that the algorithm from what I understand, is much more finely tuned and much more predictive of the things that you would like to see, and has tremendous reach in getting videos out there. I mean, millions and millions of views of videos within a very short amount of time that Casey Newton, who writes platformer.news, he mentioned that it is a way to harness attention and keep you sitting in front of it for a long time. And I've heard stories of people just getting lost in TikTok because it shows you the next video that you really want to see. And Instagram and Facebook have been trying to do this for years and are not nearly as good as TikTok at making people want to stay connected to it.
Right. The only thing I've seen that is analogous to that, and I agree with you that TikTok is head and shoulders above everyone else, artificial head and shoulders above everyone else, is YouTube. you know, mm-hmm. Those good old folks at Google have also honed that algorithm to a fairly well in terms of putting content in front of your eyeballs. And mm-hmm. as someone who likes going through cooking videos, I can attest as to how compelling some of that can be. So a couple of other things I think that are useful in terms of understanding this. ByteDance, an incredibly lucrative company. The revenues for the company last year were somewhere on the order of about $34 billion. So that's a chunk of money. And that also puts them on probably not the same playing field exactly as Facebook, but they're in the neighborhood, you know? Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, when you look at companies setting their sights for, you know, revenues and for market position, you know, this is the competition that we're looking at. And from a parental point of view, the concern would be obviously the monetization. And monetization is going to come from two sources. It's going to come from the use of the information that they collect about their users, and it's going to come from providing advertisements to those users. And so those are the things that parents need to really reflect upon when they see their kids getting all excited about this.
Yeah. And really, they do need to be concerned about their kids, because that New York Times article that you mentioned showed that more than a third of those 49 million daily users in the United States are under the age of 14. Mm-hmm. And so 13 is where we typically say kids can have their own social media accounts. And to have more than a third of those users be under that age is really quite alarming. And, you know, if parents are just letting their kids do this, then they're exposed to those advertisers and how they're monetizing, but then they're also just exposed to some of the things on there that are just not appropriate for kids also.
Right. Which TikTok, you know, admittedly tries to stamp out. They have community guidelines like every other social media platform. And as you said, their algorithm is quite effective. It's quite sophisticated, and it's used not only to promote videos, but then also to stomp out things that shouldn't necessarily be on the platform. But the reality is, given the volume of material that is created, it is not possible for them to block everything that might be potentially mm-hmm. harmful. And I'll give you a specific example in a little bit. But I think one of the things that, you know, parents need to understand is that age limit of 13 is driven by United States law. So we had the passage of the Child Online Privacy Protection Act, which prevents companies on the internet from collecting personally identifying information from anybody who's under the age of 13. So just by the terms of service for this particular app, kids of that age should not be using it. So if a child of, say, 10 or 11 is using TikTok to create their own videos and put them out in the world, they've either lied about their age, which, you know, is not going to come as a huge shock to anybody who's watched kids use the internet, or parents are actively assisting them in doing that. Mm-hmm. And you and I have talked before about what some of the, you know, parental / cyber ethical issues are with that kind of decision.
Yeah, and it's really unfortunate that it's at that point, because when you do that, you're teaching your children that this doesn't matter and we are free to break this rule. And it's in there for a reason, to protect your kids. And we definitely want kids to be protected. And that's one of the drawbacks of these kinds of situations, and giving kids devices and letting them have free rein or install whatever apps they want. And you really need to be, as a parent, paying attention to what they're doing, because it's easy for them to hide things and do things that you don't want them to see. And also, in the UK, it's estimated that 44% of children ages 8 to 12 use TikTok, which, when you think about that, that's nearly half. Like, one in every two 8 to 12 year olds is not just having access to a device, but also using TikTok itself, which is a highly addictive, very algorithmically tuned app that makes you want to be in there more often.
Right. And, you know, maybe, you know, we say 8 to 12 year olds, and I think you and I are both aware. I mean, you have younger kids than I do, but we've both been through this process. You know, we're sort of aware of the technology sophistication of kids, right? Mm-hmm. 8, 9, 10 year olds can use this stuff really well. But I sometimes find it more effective to remind people that when you're talking about an 8 year old, you're talking about a third grader. And then that sort of frames the development, it frames the education, it frames the wisdom, really. I mean, you wouldn't trust your average third grader with many, you know, high-risk devices. And yet, far too many are carrying around smartphones and engaging in global platforms without the necessary supervision. And that is the trade-off. And it is really challenging for parents, believe me, I completely get it. But that, yes, you may say, particularly during a pandemic, I want my kid to have a creative outlet. They love the music. Sometimes they do really funny skits on TikTok. It's great for them. And that really is fantastic. But the trade-off is you need to be supervising that so you understand what they're seeing and who they're interacting with, particularly if they have misrepresented their age.
Yep, for sure. And my third grader about 2 months ago said, when we were talking about going to the store to get something, she volunteered to drive us there in the car. And I thought, wow, no, definitely not. And then she was like, oh, I'm just kidding. But if you let me,
you're only two thick phone books away from having a chauffeur.
Right, exactly. So, you know, that when you think about it like that, you're like, that's just silly. I mean, you just laugh it off. And yet these kids have access to it. So you mentioned that one of the justifications I've heard from parents is, well, they're just doing lip sync videos or dance videos or whatever the case is. And that's all well and good. And I'm sure that creative outlet is important. But it's about how they're going about doing it also, which is concerning to me. So for example, you know, doing a lip sync or a dance video to get attention and likes, it's really going after the wrong thing. It's not so much an expression of creativity as it is a seeking for attention from people that they can't possibly know, because if you get above 50 likes, then you are automatically in the territory of people you don't know. So when you're in a third grader, so they're going for the wrong reasons. And then they're also getting into things that could be inappropriate for them to be doing as well. And so that I think is important. So there are good uses for it. So people creating amusing videos that we talked about, I think that's good. Entertainment is good. Laughing is good.
I certainly hope so. Yeah.
There's good education. We've talked about the high school chemistry teacher who uses TikTok to teach all the time.
Phil Cook is his name, I think. Yeah. He's amazing. Yeah. I mean, absolutely wonderful videos.
Great stuff. Yeah. So there's also good kinds of influencing, and depending on where you lean, some influences are not good and other influences are good. And we can be good with that. And then those are ways that people use it, and you can follow a specific person and see everything they post. You can also follow specific hashtags about a specific thing and see everything that's going on there. So there's lots of different ways to use it that are positive and good. But there's also some other things, and I think you've got some good anecdotes to share with us about this.
This is merely, Jethro, the tip of the TikTok iceberg. Mm-hmm. So we TikTok, maybe, is that the way? Yeah. Look, you know, let's just start a little bit more broadly. And you and I were laughing about how this has very much a, oh my God, Elvis Presley is on Ed Sullivan, and kids, you can look that up on Wikipedia, moment to it, you know, about, you know, the horror because of the dancing that Elvis Presley did when he went on national TV. But, you know, without sounding too much like an old fogey, one of the things that parents need to think about if their kids are going to dive into the TikTok world is that the music clips that are available for background music for all of these videos are drawn from contemporary music. And there may be content within that that is uncomfortable for parents or raises questions that they don't necessarily want to answer at 9, 10, 11 years old. So go ahead.
If I may, this is the other thing that that they have done so well compared to YouTube and Instagram is bringing in the music intentionally rather than taking it down as soon as somebody uses it. I've posted so many videos on YouTube that used background music that was, you know, copyrighted, and I used it just as background music for what I was doing. And even things that I thought were safe to do that with were taken down by YouTube. And so the opposite of that is what TikTok has done, which is said, here's this music you can use, and we encourage you to use it. And that is taking a completely opposite approach to that whole issue. And people love music and they love interacting with it and hearing it. And so they will use it again and again and again. And that's part of the virality of what TikTok has created.
Absolutely. And that's what actually does make them a potential threat to something like Facebook. Because what was it, 2016 or 2017, Dayun basically joined with a service called Musical.ly, musical.ly. And that's where the music comes from. And I would assume, without having delved into that piece of it, that they worked out licensing agreements with all of these different artists, which allows them to use these clips in the videos. And you're absolutely right. It's a brilliant approach because the music is right there for the kids. There's no licensing issues. So, you know, from that perspective, again, we get back to this idea of cyber-ethical use of content and of copyright. That's ideal. You know, that's exactly what kids should be doing, which is finding licensed content and using it. So that's all good. But that being said, as a parent, one of the things that you're constantly asking yourself is this content appropriate for my child at the time that they're using this app? And that should be an ongoing question. You may not care what your 16 or 17 year old listens to, but you may very well care what your 9 year old is putting into the earbuds. So there's that. You know, the other thing too, and again, this becomes an age issue, is that in terms just of the dance moves that people do, you know, or the clothing that they wear when they do them, this is all part of the media environment in which your child is growing up. And so the question really is, how much of it do you want them to see? What is appropriate? What kind of messages, what kind of images are they absorbing when they watch this? You know, look, you're in the thick of this, Jethro. So
yeah, for sure.
I don't know how you deal with it.
Well, I intentionally do not let my kids use TikTok. And if we ever watch a video from TikTok, we watch it together as a family in typically an isolated situation so that it's not about the feed and the algorithm, but it's about us making a conscious choice to watch specific things. And we do that with all the media that we watch, that it's not just sit and veg. Although this summer, I'm not going to lie, there's been a lot more of that. But,
give yourself a little bit of a break, right? No.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you really have to make some specific choices and say, this is what we're going to do and how we're going to spend our time. And I encourage all parents to think deeply about that and make better choices about it for the sake of your children.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, look, you offered a nice segue into the anecdotal piece of this. And I think, you know, like with every social media platform, there's both good examples and there's bad examples. Well, just let me give you one of each just to kind of launch us into the we'll segue into the risk section after this. But one of my favorite stories from recent TikTok news was of this woman in the midst of all of this pandemic stuff, which is just crazy. She sees some guy put a dance video on TikTok. And in the comment section, the guy must have gotten hundreds of comments, you know, for his video. But she said, you know, I really fancy you. You look like a really nice guy. And he wrote back. He saw the comment somehow and he wrote back, and now they're dating. And it just, you see where this could go. The TikTok clearly has the potential to branch out into every aspect of human relationships. And that's kind of sweet. I love that stuff.
Yes.
You know, more typical, and there, you know, we could talk about the educational piece some other time, but a more typical situation is that someone who's in a work environment is using TikTok in an inappropriate way. You know, so yeah. The example that I had was an English police officer who decided that he was going to do a bunch of topless dancing. You know, male police officer, so maybe a little less edgy, but still not very appropriate. And then decided he would hone his sexualized repertoire of jokes on TikTok. And, you know, this is the kind of thing you and I talk about endlessly, that people don't necessarily think through the consequences of what they're doing with social media. And the, you know, TikTok is as much of a problem as any other app, Facebook, Snapchat, Instagram, you name it. So again, you know, when we get to the, you know, cyber ethics for educators, cyber ethics for law enforcement, everybody should be aware of what can go wrong.
Yeah. Well, and it's so easy for things to go wrong. Somebody interprets something differently or understands differently what you're trying to do, or you just said something completely inappropriate or did something completely inappropriate that typically you would never do in public. And yet the app feature makes you feel more anonymous, even though you're going for, you know, thousands and millions of views, which,
Or you get caught up in the culture of it. Like, you know, here's this really cool dance video and you've got people demonstrating different moves or inventing different dances. And hey, I just want to be part of the party, you know, but again, you got to think about context and role. Now, it might be an entirely different situation if this guy was a Native American and he was showing off a Native dance as part of some festival. There being, you know, a shirtless dancer would totally make sense, but not necessarily doing a lewd move dance as an English police officer.
Right.
But what do I know?
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the things that parents should consider as they're dealing with this. We've already talked a little bit about it. Privacy is certainly one of those things. And TikTok, like most social media apps, asks for your age when you start. That's in order to protect from kids getting on. But also there's, you know, you start adding to this social graph of who you are. And that's one of those key pieces. So privacy is certainly an issue.
It really is. And when I was researching this and you and I were discussing this show, I was really blown away by the idea that TikTok claims, at least, not to simply use the birthday as the marker of how old someone is, but they're actually using that same AI linked with facial recognition in an attempt to identify underage users. And on top of that, they say that they will occasionally buy information from third parties to help with this same identification. So here we've got a Chinese-based company using facial recognition on users worldwide. Where's that information going? How long is it held? What other purposes might it be used for? Or alternatively, they're buying information about your child. You know, so for instance, they could be basing that on an email address. They could be basing it on an IP address. They could be basing it on a unique mobile ID. All of this stuff is part, as you say, of the social graph that's out there. And it is, incidentally, all of the stuff that law enforcement uses to identify potential, you know, malfeasance online. So the more information your child is putting out and the earlier they do so, the easier it is for a company like ByteDance to use that information in ways that you might not be comfortable with.
Right.
And obviously they will say in response, we're just doing this. What was their statement? As is standard practice across our industry, we conduct quote unquote high level age modeling to better understand our users. Well, that's precisely the problem. The more they understand their users, the more that algorithm you were talking about gets honed and the more they can hone their advertising.
Well, and here's another issue is that with that, you can start, you know, with IP targeting or fingerprinting or mobile device ID numbers and things like that, you can start building a database. And with 49 million active users just in the United States, you're getting a lot of data. And when it becomes that large, then you can start to make assumptions because you see the same types of things happening all the time. As an example, when you would go to youtube.com while on the school network at the middle school that I worked at, the amount of fighting video games and softcore porn that you would see in your recommended feeds, even with the protections and the filters and all that kind of stuff in the school, those things would still pop up all the time.
Sure.
And so whenever, you know, I would go do a presentation at a school or whatever, I would always make sure that I have the video downloaded and I'm never playing it live from YouTube because of what the related search or related videos are going to pop up as. And that's something where what I learned was that my students were just looking for that kind of stuff all the time. And so that's what came up if you were on that IP address. And so even with all the protections we tried to put in place, we still couldn't get around some of those things because YouTube understood that this collection of IP addresses is interested in this kind of content. So we're going to deliver that and make it easy for them to get it.
That is exactly correct. It's a great summation of how this stuff pops up. And think about this, you know, I've played around with the TikTok app a little bit. And when you think about how fast those videos are fed to you, right? I think the point you made earlier was really important for parents in that, you know, the video, let's say it lasts 30 seconds, there's no selection process, right? Like with YouTube, the video ends, you actually have to choose on the right-hand side what the next video is. You do a search or whatever. In TikTok, the video you just finished scrolls up and the next one starts playing immediately. And so the algorithm has removed all choice from you in terms of what you see. And, you know, obviously you can do searches and so forth, but once you set that ball in motion, it just feeds you as long as you sit there.
Yeah. And Instagram Reels are the same way. And YouTube actually has an autoplay feature that is, I think, turned on by default, that it'll play the next video automatically. And
we see where this is going, right? They're all competing for those same eyeballs using the same technology, right?
Yep. So I had muted a YouTube video on my computer a couple of weeks ago, and I came back like 4 hours later, and it was just looping through all the YouTube videos. And I was like, oh, what a waste. So anyway, so there are other things parents should look out for. Unsupervised purchases, which TikTok has this feature where you can do TikTok rewards and you can get coupons for real world things. And so once a kid has a coupon, they may be very tempted to use it, even if they don't need the thing, and could try to find a way to get that, among other things.
Or they could sell it to somebody and get actual cash. They could trade it. I have in this update for Cyber Traps for the Young, the illicit use of money by kids has exploded in the 10 years since the first book. There's a lot to cover.
Yeah. Well, and even my favorite story is about kids creating black markets at schools based on the reward system that we created for the school. Man, there's some good stories there. So we'll definitely have to talk about that at another time. I love that.
Well, let me tell you real quickly, my favorite, just to divert. When I did Cyber Traps for the Young, I was blown away. We talked about the creativity of kids and how inspiring it is. So these kids would lose their phones because of some, you know, disciplinary action. And other kids had created a black market of old phones from their homes. No cell coverage because there was no SIM chip, but you could still use them with the Wi-Fi because they all had. So as long as the phone was charged, so these kids were renting out these old phones so kids could get online even when they weren't supposed to. Brilliant / scary.
Yes, totally. I had that happen at my school, and kids are renting out phones for $5 a day. And it's just wild. Just wild. Yeah. We definitely need to talk more about that because it's pretty amazing.
Yeah.
So a couple other things we talked about, challenges that things parents should look out for. One is inappropriate content. We mentioned that briefly about lyrics that aren't appropriate, dance moves, and then also risky challenges around different things that you do, body image, self-image, things like that. So let's talk about those for a minute, because these have actually gotten media attention and can lead to real physical injury. What are some of your thoughts on that?
Well, this is really just a brutal area. And it's, scary as a parent. There's no way around it that, we're all aware of the peer pressure aspect of childhood. We've all gone through it. We've watched our kids go through it. It's tough. The thing with social media is that the scope and the reach of peer pressure is so much greater. Mm-hmm. And so we have seen over the last really decade, rise of high risk challenges, high risk activities, and a couple of concrete examples may be useful. So one of them is the quote unquote blackout challenge. Mm-hmm. And the idea, and keep in mind that we unfortunately have to refer to these as cross-platform threats, because right. they show up in Snapchat, they show up on Instagram, all the rest of it. But the blackout challenge is pretty straightforward, that you basically try to strangle yourself for a few seconds to cause you to black out, and you either film yourself, of course you risk dropping your phone, which is dumb, or you have a friend, which is probably the safer way to do it, quote unquote, film you while you're doing this. But, just earlier this year, the latest example of a 10-year-old Italian girl. And you see, these are global things, right? They're not limited by language or country or anything else. So she tried to do this and she wound up strangling herself to death. And, these things grab the headlines and they're incredibly rare. But the fact that they happen at all is deeply disturbing. Yeah, and so for sure. Parents need to be aware of that. Another one that has gotten a lot of media attention, which is really, truly disturbing, is the quote unquote blue whale challenge. I don't know if you've run across this,
but tell us what it is, though.
Yeah, the blue whale challenge is this cascading series of challenges. So I think that in the most typical version, there's theoretically 50 of these, and you do more and more severe things to yourself over a period of days or weeks or months. But the 50th challenge basically is to commit suicide. Yeah. And, there's been a non-zero number of kids who have in fact done that, and, or who have, scarred themselves or other things. So, look, this is the kind of thing that just freaks people out. And of course, headline writers love this stuff, and we can't underscore enough how rare it is. But it is something that people should be aware of, because the outcome is so sufficiently dire that you want to do everything you can to make sure you're aware of what's going on.
Well, and this really brings up again the negative side effect of having kids younger than 13 using it, is that they can get exposed to these, not know what's going on, not know how to talk to anybody about it, and then can go down this dark path that they don't have the capability to reason through, because their brains are not developed yet. And so, anybody under 25 probably has similar concerns.
Medically, your prefrontal cortex is not fully developed until 25 to 30, which is your decision-making capability. Unfortunately for the two of us, women develop that capability sooner than men do.
Very true.
Sadly. But look, I think the other thing, Jethro, that really underscores your point about the age is that some of the challenges just look like goofy fun, right?
Right.
So there's one that's been floating around recently about throwing a squeeze bottle of honey into the freezer and letting it sit there for 15, 20 minutes and then squeezing out the semi-frozen treat into your mouth. And at the end of the day, that's probably unlikely to kill anyone unless you're diabetic and you have a severe insulin spike, or you, for some reason, choose some other concoction that is dangerous. But it sounds like fun, right? It sounds kind of goofy. And you get these people with millions of followers doing this. And that's the influencing piece that is at the background of all of this conversation. Who are your kids watching? Who are your kids listening to? And who is influencing quite literally how they behave?
Yeah. And you really need to pay attention to that, because I have seen, and you have seen, and probably anybody listening to this has seen, how somebody's mood or feelings about themselves have changed because of them being exposed to social media, period. Because it is naturally a comparison game. It is naturally a, yes, am I good enough game? And those thoughts are real. And we have to be paying attention to that and knowing how it's impacting our youth, because it does make a big difference in their lives and could lead them to make horrific choices in the name of pleasing somebody out there online that we could never understand who that person really is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Knowledge is power, as the old Roman saying goes. And I think that parents should not be shy about having as much information about their child's online life as possible. And when it's, you know, when they're under the age of 13, quite honestly, that knowledge should be nearly absolute, because for all of the risks you're talking about, obviously, we're in the business of raising adults or future adults.
Yes.
So there is a process by which we need to let go and give people space to explore and to make mistakes and so forth. But you know, given the cost to benefit ratio of some of these things, you know, at the extreme end, the cost of some of these challenges vastly outweighs whatever creative benefit the child might have at the age of 8 or 9. There are so many other outlets. I might say, for instance, community theater, where they're actually dealing with real people, singing real songs, you know, something like that, or, you know, any number of potential options. But this social media world is a construct, and it is an algorithmically driven construct that may not be in your child's best interest.
Yeah. And really, you know, you need to make the choice as a parent whether or not you allow this, but you need to also make more than the choice of whether or not it's allowed. And that's, I think, the real key here, is that if you allow it, you need to have discussions, talk about it. You need to figure out what they're allowed to do and what they're not allowed to do. And you need to be in charge of controlling that and being aware of what's going on. The real problem I see is that access is a on or off switch. And when the switch is flipped, then it's a flood of information and different stuff that they can get involved in.
Yeah.
And the switch is off, then they don't have access to it. And so you need to find a way to do it appropriately for your family and make that choice together so that you know what is going on, what you're getting into, and what kids are using it for. And this, it'd be a lot easier if you, if these things didn't exist, it'd be a lot easier if you just said no completely. But you also need to teach your kids so that when they turn 18, they don't go and binge on all this stuff and then, you know, have troubles with it later on. So it really is an education piece that has to start early, and you need to be talking about it a lot.
Yeah, it's crazy stuff. I think back on this, Jethro, and my kids were 14 and 12 when the iPhone was released. And it was obviously just not remotely something that they would wind up handling. And that 4 and 6 years between the release of the iPhone and them becoming adults, man, it looks so easy now compared to what parents are confronting these days. Mm-hmm. It's insane. It really is. So I think what we had discussed was that we would walk people out with some suggestions on how to kind of cope with this a little bit. So why don't you take us through some of that and close on a positive note?
Yeah. So this is all manageable. And so it's not the end of the world. So it's not like you can't ever touch it. It's not like you can't ever talk about it. I think setting some boundaries in place is really good. Number one, say you cannot have the app until you're 13. And if you want to watch videos with your kids, totally fine. In fact, I encourage that because then you can talk about what's going on and what you're seeing. So I was in Kansas City a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking about the TV show Ted Lasso, which is just a phenomenal TV show, by the way.
Absolutely. Totally Team Ted here.
Yep. So really well done. And there are a couple aspects that I think are really great. Number one, the two lead female characters are not catty and fighting, and they have a real, appropriate, healthy, supportive relationship, which I think is fantastic. So much of what we see in the media is women fighting with each other and not being appropriate in that way. These two women are like totally supportive of each other, and it's awesome. The second thing is, as I was talking with a teacher, she said that she watches it with her 12 or 11 year old daughter, something like that. And she hadn't watched that next episode yet. And I said, well, you know, you need to know that there's masturbation and oral sex in there. And so you should be prepared for that. And she said, oh, good. That's great. Because now we can talk about that and what it means. And so instead of being afraid of these things, talk about them with your kids, and your kids are seeing them already. So you might as well have the conversation with them about it.
And that is a truth right there.
Yes, exactly. Trust me. I know. So the kids are talking about it anyway. So talk about it with them and don't shy away from it and say, this is evil, we can't do it. Or this is bad, we can't do it. Really take the time to say, you're interested in this app. Let's do it together. When you're 13, we can talk about maybe you having an account, but that doesn't mean that you have to do it, but at least set that boundary. Pay attention to what they're doing. If you've already given it to your kids, it's tough to take it away and leads to some other challenges. So pay attention to what they're doing and then talk about the challenges that they're facing. And if you are 13 to 15, then TikTok does make your account private by default. But you should also pay attention to that as well, especially if your kid has said they're over 18, which pretty much every kid in the world will do because they know that's when they get this good stuff that they really want. So
well, you see, that's exactly the good stuff, right?
Yeah. So
they're wired to accelerate their age. And that is absolutely normal for kids to do. You know, they're curious. They want to understand what their bodies are doing. They're infused with all of this culture. Right? We talk about this all the time. These kids are growing up in a specific mix and they want to know what's going on. And that's what they're looking for.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, I think the other thing is Common Sense Media. They have a guide for more suggestions, and we'll link to that on there as well. And I mean, there's good that can happen. There's also bad things. Don't be afraid of it. Just know what's going on and talk with your kids about it. I feel like we say that every single time we talk about anything, right?
Thank God, because you know, sooner or later, the message will get through. And the one thing I do want to close out with is that certainly if you've been listening to this, you've been educating yourself, but I would really urge parents, if there is a new app that's out there, or if there's an app their kids are interested in, take a few minutes to use the search engine of your choice, whether it's Google or Bing or DuckDuckGo or whatever it is. Put in TikTok and teens or TikTok and parental concerns and do some reading about what might be of interest to you and what you should talk to your kids about. Just basic homework.
Yeah. We were supposed to end on a positive note, and then you had this ominous fire engine or something go by in the background. That come on.
Well, look, I have a great little apartment in Brooklyn, but it's a block and a half from a fire station. not much I can do about that.
That's all right.
Anyway,
great conversation. So, anyway,
there we go. Excellent conversation, Jethro. Thank you. That wraps up this episode of the Cyber Traps podcast. In the coming weeks, we will continue our coverage of emerging trends in a variety of areas, including digital misconduct, cyber safety, parenting, cybersecurity, privacy, and yes, again, the challenges of high-tech parenting. Along the way, we'll talk to our growing collection of international experts who are helping us to understand the risks and rewards of digital technology.
You can find the Cyber Traps podcast on all your favorite podcast apps. We hope that you'll share it with your friends and colleagues and reach out to us if you have questions or topic suggestions. If you'd like to follow us on Twitter, I'm at Jethro Jones and Fred is at Cyberchaps. And if you're still listening, you must have loved what we were talking about today. And if that's the case, please leave us a 5-star rating and review in your podcast service of choice. And if you want to donate to the Center for Cyber Ethics, go to centerforcyberethics.org/donate. We look forward to sharing our next episode with you on Thursday.
Do you want to save time on prep work, increase student achievement for all of your students, reliably meet Tier 1 standards? You can do it all, but don't waste another minute. Head straight to IXL.com/B to learn how IXL's research-proven teaching and learning platform can help you achieve these goals. That's IXL.com/BE.